listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net. Oh, my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
From one big game to another, many Americans, well, and non-Americans for that matter, were looking at you, Juice. Watch that terrible drubbing of a Super Bowl on Sunday, and will now be taking in a huge game, albeit not a final, as City and Chelsea grace our television screens tonight. Graham Rutherford of One World Sports, their English Premier League writer, will be joining us to cover this in much more greater detail later in the show, and also cover a little other Premier League news as well. There's a new leader in La Liga, and the one that has emerged up on top is Atletico Madrid. Juventus are back on track after slapping Inter just 3-1 on Sunday. Ooh. Bayern still strolling through the Bundesliga, beating Eintracht Frankfurt 5-0 and setting records left and right. And the big game of the weekend was not Sunday. No, what? There was something else. You know, what was that? Yes, it's true. I know. The big game on the weekend was not. It was not on Sunday. Rather, it was on Saturday afternoon in sunny Southern California as the U.S. beat South Korea 2-0. Yes, and that's where we'll probably start today. We'll go ahead and start there. The U.S. did beat South Korea 2-1. They started things off quite nice and early, getting a goal in the first couple of minutes thanks to the wonderful Wondolowski. Yes. And look, it's great to see all this happen. I love to see the United States win. I'm a huge fan of the United States. Obviously, I'm an American. And I will also say that I'm very, very hypercritical of the United States, and that I just scrutinize everything and I expect so much from them. It's probably unrealistic, and it probably hurts the show in many ways because, you know, we are so hypercritical. We want so much from them that sometimes I wonder if, you know, the U.S. national team's media offices thinks that it's just not the best coverage, and that's fine. We still cover them no matter what. Again, it's great to see that the United States bagged a win against another World Cup qualified team, nation, if I may. But I'm at the same time, I look at the 2-0 win and I look at all the chances that the United States created. And if Mexico can put four past South Korea, well, why can't we, right? I mean, am I wrong in saying that? Mexico can't be that much better than us. I mean, they barely qualified for the World Cup. I know that there's a lot of history behind the Mexican national team. I said it last week. I wasn't that impressed with the Mexican goals against South Korea. A lot of them kind of looked bumbled and over the line. And yes, you can argue that, you know, even the two goals from Wondolowski came from rebounds and stuff. And that's not the most impressive. I agree with you. I'm just saying, I guess I expected more. I also think that we got a little bit lucky because that one goal the goal that should have been maybe, I don't know. It's up to you guys. You decide for yourself. Let me know. The one that Raimondo basically saved on the line. I really think that you can make the argument that may have crossed the line completely. And if it did get counted as a goal, I think that definitely changes that outcome of the game drastically. It could have very well been a much different game. Now, yes, Graham Soucy, Chris Wondolowski, great games, okay? Great to see them get those games as well. They're definitely making a case for that 23-man squad. Wondolowski, I think, has a tougher time only because, you know, considering the fact that Jurgen Klinsmann, I guess, likes to play with one up top in general, you know, the competition for that forward and the striker's role is really tough, obviously. You know, even Landon Donovan is being looked at as a person who's, you know, should have a sure seat into this national team squad, but playing where? And he's come out and said it, you know, it doesn't matter where he plays, he just wants to be on the team, and he knows that because he has played in so many different, you know, positions on so many different occasions for the United States, you know, both on international competitive games and friendlies and even, you know, for his club at Galaxy and you know, wherever else he's played. He's played all over the place, okay? Minus defense. this is just kind of some of the things that are going into the decisions that will be made come, I believe, May 23rd when Jurgen makes that 23-man roster kind of commitment. But I wanted to bring up a couple, or one last point, basically, before I move on about the U.S. team, because I don't want to spend too much time about it. It was just a friendly. I know it's kind of a big friendly in the sense that it's a build-up to the World Cup, but a friendly nonetheless. Phil Shane said this, and I thought it was just such a brilliant point, and it really kind of, you know, speaks to where we struggle and where we struggle is in defense. Now, I know you guys are going to say, well, the United States kept a clean sheet. Again, look at that Raimondo goal, well, that should have been. It could have changed that game completely. Should have maybe been a goal. But look at just all the chances that South Korea created. Yes, we have a fantastic goalkeeper, no matter who we go to, whether it's our first string keeper or our third string keeper. We have some fantastic goalkeepers. And yes, they do a great job in general. You know, taking care of mistakes that our backline creates. But just look at this. Just look at this. If you think that Parkhurst and Brad Evans had a good game and are good enough, you know, to kind of play on the international stage and be world class, well, just close your eyes for a moment. Yeah, go ahead, close them. And then picture Cristiano Ronaldo bombing down the wings, attacking that back line. Now do you think Parkhurst and Evans are good enough? Yeah. No. I didn't think so either. So, I mean, just remember that. That's where we really need to struggle. I mean, I'm with you. I don't think that we're suffering at all in midfield or attack. We have some really, really great options up there. It's our defense that I'm really kind of concerned about. And you know, Jurgen kind of told his defensive line that he really wanted them to kind of keep calm, carry on, and pass out through any kind of pressure and deal with anything, be able to play in their own half without being, you know, too crazy and booting balls up top and stuff like that, to really play through their own half and into their attack. And you know, they did do it. They held to their guns. They did do a decent job with that. I just, you know, again, if you put some of these, you know, if you look at the people that are going to be attacking them, I don't even want to look at the German side and what they can throw at us come World Cup time. It really does worry me in defense, and I hope that we can kind of get that sorted out. I'm not sure what is going to be Jurgen's solution to that. Moving on, let's jump to Spain real quick. Barcelona stumble at Valencia. Now, that is really what opens up everything this weekend. They lost 3-2. Now, with that loss, both Madrid teams had the opportunity to kind of capitalize on this. Unfortunately, Real Madrid did not do this. They drew 1-1 with Atletico Bilbao, and Cristiano Ronaldo gets a fairly late red card, straight red, for an incident where people are, basically he quote unquote slapped or hit or raised an arm to an Athletic Bilbao player, and if you look at the replays, guys, please, please go look at it. It's quite ridiculous. Quite ridiculous. I mean, this is an instance where, in my opinion, he's really getting kind of, he's getting this card because of who he is. I hate to say this, guys, but I think that he is being, you know, kind of put on a pedestal and made an example of because he's Cristiano Ronaldo. I think, you know, this referee wanted to make an example of him, show him that he's above Cristiano Ronaldo, that he can, you know, dictate the game and almost be a star. You know, I think he was kind of wanting to step into the limelight here and get some attention because, I mean, looking at that, it's not like Ronaldo was trying to punch him. If anything, it was more like it wasn't even like a slap. It's not like he was brushing his face away, trying to get a fly out of his face. It wasn't even that. It was more of like just a, hey, you are in my personal space. I'm lifting my arm just to get you out of there. Where the man before that straight comes up to, you know, Ronaldo and is in his face, you know, like practically headbutting him. The way that Ronaldo stood up to him, in my opinion, again, I'm actually falling more and more for Ronaldo as I watch this guy, because it's just, I mean, there's no other way you can really take that as a professional. If you kind of, you know, turn away or, you know, you kind of look like you're weak, okay? Like you're unmasculine and you're afraid to kind of get in a confrontation. Ronnie doesn't back down at all. You know, he faces this guy straight up. And once this guy falls to the ground like he's been, you know, hit with an atomic bomb or something, like his other teammates kind of come in and another guy kind of chests Ronnie away and he should have been carded and didn't get carded. I mean, the whole fiasco, go check it out. In my opinion, just sorely, sorely misjudged. Sad straight red, in my opinion. I'm not sure if it would have done any difference. You know, I just didn't think that Real Madrid were going to get a result from there or 3 points from there. And again, because they stumbled there, that left Atletico Madrid the perfect opportunity to kind of capitalize. And they go 3 points up on top of La Liga with a 4-0 win over Real Sociedad, who, you know, maybe might have been tired from some midweek football. Probably not. And really just poor form from them. Atletico Madrid looked fantastic. Diego Simeone's men, I mean, this is, I guess, their best opportunity to kind of take the La Liga title away from the top two. And, I mean, I didn't think it was going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. But, again, it's their best opportunity. I hope it happens. Just for the simple fact that I'm sick and tired of seeing a Barcelona and Real Madrid title winning team in La Liga. It's just, it's boring to me, okay? On a side note in Spain, and this is kind of, I don't mean to bring it down, guys. I'm sorry. I'm very, very sorry. But I do think it's kind of important. Luis Aragonés, Spanish national team coach that essentially brought them, that started this, you know, kind of just incredible run back in 2008 when they won the Euros. He passed away on Saturday, 75 years old, passed away in Madrid. The kind of outpouring of support and well wishes and thoughts and prayers, all that good stuff, it's actually incredible. I mean, the man deserves it for one, but I mean, From all sides, from everywhere in Spain, people are kind of pouring out and saying, from the royalty, really, down to the people in the streets, players on Twitter, obviously former players, just kind of the outpouring of emotion and sentiment for this man is really incredible. I mean, for me, I'm not Spanish. I don't have any real connection to the Spanish team. I can appreciate what they've done and what he started. You know, I think he kind of really was able to gel this Spanish team who, you know, generally was known for a lot of inner fighting, a big old divide in the dressing room. He was able to kind of stop that, put a stop to it, gel these guys together, make all that talent into one fantastic machine. And I mean, what we see now is really kind of a byproduct of what he started. So, you know, take some time, do a little bit of research on him, read up about it. It's really incredible stuff. And it's not just the Spanish kind of public or players or you know, royalty or the people in the streets. It's also regular players from around the world. Samuel Eto'o actually tweeted out something from London. He's a Chelsea player. I mean, this is the kind of respect that this man had around the world. For what it's worth, it's definitely a dark day, sort of. I mean, obviously there was a lot of football going on and America won, but with regards to seeing it, Luis Aragonés pass away, it's definitely kind of a sour note. I don't know how to say this, guys. I'm sorry. I'm very bad with words. But definitely World Football Daily respects the man. And this is just us trying to pay our respects to him, to Spanish football, for what he did for Spanish football, for what he did for the game in general. I mean, really, it's incredible stuff, guys. So moving on, let's try to liven things up. I think we'll jump to some English Premier League football right now. Why not, right? So on to the Premier League with a brilliant guest for the first time, actually making his World Football Daily debut. And happy for it are we, Graham Rutherin of One World Sports, their One World Sports Premier League writer. Graham, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you, Raphael. Good to be on.
Yeah. Thank you for making the time for us. We kind of organized this somewhat last minute over the weekend in the middle of a huge, huge, quote-unquote, big game here in the States. I myself, I've already told you guys where I was watching it. This is, Graham, from one big game to another, even though it's just a league game, it's estimated that over 100 million people will be tuning in tonight to watch tonight's match. How important is this City-Chelsea match to soccer fanatics around the globe?
I think it's a huge match now. In 2014, it's a massive match. It's been interesting to see over the past, well, in Chelsea's case, over the past 10 years, and in Manchester City's case, maybe over the past 5 years, and how this game has managed to propel itself to the top of the Premier League. Right now, this is probably the biggest game in the Premier League. And maybe 10 years ago, that would never have been the case. I mean, I'm not even sure Manchester City were in the Premier League 10 years ago. They were yo-yoing between the two divisions. And as I say, that this probably is the biggest game of the season so far. There's so much narrative to this game, and there's so much personal rivalry between the two managers and between the two clubs as well. It should be an interesting watch.
You got to think that basically City may be just... Well, would they be satisfied with a draw, Graham? This has to mean more to Chelsea in order to kind of keep that chase for the title going, to keep that chase relevant. Even will City be okay with the draw tonight?
I think they will be, and they won't be. Obviously, in the context of the title race, it keeps them in control, really. Even though Arsenal are top of the league at the moment, I think a draw would keep them in control of the title race. But there is that home record that City have, and they'll want to keep that going, and they'll want to keep that aura about the Etihad that they have at the moment, which is basically a fortress. I mean, no team has come away from the Etihad with a clean sheet. I think they've scored like an average of 3 or 4 goals a game at the Etihad. So the interesting paradox for Chelsea is that, you know, Mourinho might be tempted to go into this game kind of parking the bus. He criticised West Ham for that a week ago, saying that they played 19th century football to get a draw at Stamford Bridge. He might be tempted to do that, but he can't really go into this game with that mentality. I think that City would pick them off if they do that. And if they do lose the game, that'll be them 6 points behind City, which could be a crucial blow in the context of the race.
Sure. And I'm glad you brought up the 19th century football, because that was just something I love to laugh about. I mean, obviously the special one comes up with some great one-liners and some great points to kind of laugh at during his press conferences. He even came out either today or yesterday and said that Manchester City are basically underachievers and should have been winning more silverware. Is he digging his own grave by saying this, or is this kind of stuff really gonna, G up his players and get them ready for this game?
it's sometimes difficult to gauge what Mourinho really is thinking and what his tactics are. All I can say is that over the years, whatever he's done, it's worked. He's won trophies. I don't know whether that's been down to... I don't know whether he's actually... this is a hindrance to him, these mind games, or whether this is actually helping him. But yes, he's called Manchester City underachievers. That's obviously going to rile them up. But Mourinho loves these kind of challenges. You know, the first 6 months of this season, it felt like he was kind of aimless a little bit, in that he didn't know who his rivals were. He didn't know whether it was Arsenal. He didn't know if he was gunning for Manchester United or Manchester City. And now he seems to have focused himself on City. And you've seen with the, when he was at Real Madrid, and he thrived on, you know, kind of attaching himself to the Barcelona rivalry. When he was at Real Madrid, he actually didn't get on very well with Pellegrini because he was at Malaga at the same time. So there's a bit of a history between the two managers. But also, his jibe with the West Ham 19th century football thing, that's got to be bad timing, because he should have seen a week later that he would have to go to Manchester City at the Etihad, the most difficult game of the season, and he might actually have to play, as he put it, 19th century football. So terrible timing from Mourinho. But let's see how Manchester City cope with his little jibes.
Well, and speaking of Manchester City kind of coping with City, or with Chelsea, obviously Sergio Aguero's out. That's obviously a blow. The goals that come from him, just the immense talent that he brings to that side is incredible. But surely there's some replacements. We've seen you know, other people step up and bag goals in his absence. How much will that injury affect Pellegrini's men this evening?
You would think it would be a big blow, but then Aguero was out for, was it 2 months towards the end of last season. A lot of people thought that Manchester City would suffer. In fact, City became stronger somehow over those 2 months. Negredo came into form. They've got a wealth of options in attack. Last week we saw Stefan Jovetic come into the side. I wonder what kind of impact he'll have, because by all accounts, I watched quite a lot of Serie A. He's an excellent player, and I thought he was an excellent signing for Manchester City. And it was really unfortunate that he got injured for such a long time at the start of the season. I'm not quite sure how much match fitness he has. I doubt he'll feature much tonight, but in the context of the rest of the season, he could really come in where Sergio Aguero is missing.
Sure. We're glad to hear that you follow Serie A as well. And you're not the first Scotsman on our show to follow Serie A. So you're keeping up with the trend. And we're also big fans of Stefan Jovetic as well. And we're hoping that he kind of comes through this season mm-hmm. in a big way. So, I mean, I'm hoping that he comes through at least. Real quick, let's just have your prediction for the evening. What do you think the result's going to be?
I think it's going to be 2-1 to City. Mm-hmm. I can't see past there, even without Aguero. I think they have too much firepower for Chelsea. I think it could be a big night for Nemanja Matic if he plays in the centre and midfield. Obviously, he could be up against, or he would be up against, Yaya Toure. And I'm not quite sure whether, as much as I rate Matic, I think he's a very good player. It's a bit of a baptism of fire going into, you know, your first big title challenge, your big first title game, and going up against Yaya Toure. So I think Manchester City will emerge winners 2-1.
Perfect. Now, staying at the top of the table, you mentioned earlier Arsenal is sitting there quite nicely for the time being. They recently, or since the last time the show's been recorded on Friday, the January transfer window closed. Arsenal finished with a last minute signing of the Swedish midfielder forward or whatever, Kim Kallström, and it's come out that, you know, during the medical, the physios basically found out that there was a fractured vertebrae in his back. And it did kind of raise some flags with Arsene Wenger, but he's come and said that he understood, and maybe if there was a couple more days to the transfer window, he may not have signed him. But because it was such a last minute thing, he figured he'd grab him anyways and use him, because there will be a point later on in the season where he will become necessary. Surely, maybe they should have focused more on Draxler or bringing in Vucinic from Juventus. Was Arsene Wenger's hand forced at all, or was it just the timing, which was just terrible?
Well, I think this is an incredible story, particularly for a team like Arsenal, who you would think would conduct themselves, which, you know, so concisely in the transfer mm-hmm. market, and for a man who supposedly counts every penny at Arsenal, Arsene Wenger. Now, I mean, I know they're Spartak Moscow are paying the wages for the first 6 weeks.
Yeah, while he's injured.
While he's injured, but the reason they bought Karlstrom is because Flamini is suspended after getting a red card, and Aaron Ramsey, this is the main one, Aaron Ramsey's injured for 6 weeks. Now Karlstrom is injured for 6 weeks. So what? You know, these two players are going to come back when Karlstrom's back, and in fact, Abu Diaby could actually come back before Karlstrom as well. So there's another midfielder that Arsenal could have before they can play Karlstrom. And Wenger's been unusually candid about this. He said today that he might not even play for Arsenal. He might never actually make an appearance. So I'm not quite sure what he was thinking. I think this is the definition of a panic buy, or a panic loan, I should say. Sure. They basically got in anyone they could, and he says that it was 5 o'clock on Friday on deadline day. By the time that he realised there was a problem, he shouldn't really have done that deal. I mean, Karlstrom shouldn't really be at Arsenal if he's injured for 6 weeks, and the whole reason he was brought in was for a short term impact. It completely betrays the point of his signing.
Sure, it is. I mean, it is a very, very interesting kind of move from Arsenal, and like you said, it's so uncharacteristic of them that it does kind of raise a couple alarm bells. Keeping kind of in the top four as well, I don't believe they're going to be there for very long, but Liverpool, mm-hmm. tough draw at the weekend with West Brom. Obviously, a Colatori major mishap kind of led to the goal that caused the draw. Could this be the beginning of an unraveling for Liverpool, or does Brendan Rodgers have enough to kind of keep them in the top four? Where do you think they're going to finish by the end of the season? What do you expect from Liverpool for the rest for the second half of the season?
Well, I'm interested that you say that you don't think they'll be there for very long in fourth place. I don't see Liverpool unraveling, to be honest. I think despite the defeat at Stoke for Manchester United, I think their main rivals for that fourth spot probably will still be Manchester United. I think at some point they will put a run of results together. However, that, you know, is it 7 points now? I think 7 points between Liverpool and Manchester United. I think that's a big enough gap for Liverpool to keep that fourth spot. I mean, especially when you have Luis Suarez, if he's playing the way he's played earlier this season. His relationship with Daniel Sturridge. I think Steven Gerrard is still one of the best central midfielders in the league, even if he is waning. And I think Liverpool are maybe just starting to grow out of Steven Gerrard. But for the moment, he's still holding his own in there. Mm-hmm. They've got several good players. They have got a few holes in their team, maybe in the defence. And as we saw yesterday with Colo-Touré making that mistake. However, I think they've got enough in attack to outscore most teams in the Premier League, and I see them finishing fourth. I see them getting that last Champions League spot ahead of Manchester United.
All right, so this is my last chance to kind of convince you otherwise, and it may be tough to convince you because the last two games been very, very dire from Tottenham Hotspurs and Tim Sherwood's men. Obviously, a draw against Hull does not help your chances to catch up to Spurs. Yeah. What chances do you see from Spurs kind of making any sort of run towards that top four?
I think they certainly have a chance. I wouldn't rule them out. However, I just think the summer has I wouldn't say crippled them, because I think they've made a number of decent signings, but there was a lot of players coming into that squad, and I'm not quite sure Spurs have an identity yet. I mean, You most teams in that top four have some sort of identity. You know, Chelsea are high pressing side, Manchester City are free flowing attacking, Liverpool, a lot of it comes through Suarez. I'm not quite sure what Tottenham have in that respect. However, I don't think the result at Hull was quite as bad as maybe some will look at it. I think Hull are a decent side, and while it's not the sort of result that is going to look back at the end of the season and think, well, that's the result that got them top four, It was a decent point, and it keeps them in the hunt for that fourth spot. I think Tim Sherwood's done a good job. I think he's come in and he's stabilized Spurs after AVB. However, I'm not quite sure if he's either got the players or, without being too harsh to him, with having the expertise to lead Spurs into that top four position.
Sure. I understand that completely, and I get it. I do feel like he did come in, and as a former player, you know, there's a certain level of energy that brings to the dressing room. So, I mean, I'm totally with you on that one.
That's absolutely how I would describe it. He brought energy to the Spurs team, and he's reinvigorated that squad. However, you know, I would actually very much liken it to the way Di Matteo came in at Chelsea. He had a similar impact. Of course, he took them all the way to the Champions League final. That's not going to happen for Spurs this season. But, when he was asked to kind of come up with his own ideas and his own strategy, that's when Di Matteo kind of was found wanting. And I have a suspicion that might also happen with Tim Sherwood.
Graham, it's an absolute pleasure having you on. I think we actually ran over the time that I've told you already, so I apologize for that. And have to get you on again soon to talk with our real main host of the show, Ollie the Juice Wilson, English Premier League commentator and all that good stuff. He's actually here in the States, kind of enjoying the Super Bowl. So we'll definitely have to get you back on again soon, Graham. And thank you so much for joining us today.
That's no problem at all. Anytime.
Not bad. Yeah. Not bad at all from Graham, considering it was his debut here on World Football Daily. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I do think that, you know, had Ollie been on, he would have done a better job than me interviewing people. I get too caught up with my own words. What happens, guys, is my mind thinks faster than my mouth can move, and I don't take the time to breathe and get my sentences out in clear fashion. So I apologize for that. But Juice will be back on Wednesday at least. Possibly tomorrow. We're not going to force him on anything. He should, yeah, whatever. We'll get Juicy when he's good and ready. But speaking of Juice, let's jump into some Italian football real quick. Juventus made it look easy at the weekend, really. They strolled past Inter Milan 3-1. The papers basically saying, just slapping Inter like a bad child, okay? And really, they made it look easy. They're gonna stroll to the title, guys. I mean, let's be honest. And you want to know why? Because nobody else wants to challenge them. And when I say that, I mean look at Roma, at home to Parma, 0-0 draw. Those are games that you have to get something, you know, get 3 points from. It's just, I mean, they need. If they wanted to kind of make a challenge for the title, and it's obvious that they're not even worried about that right now, I don't think. They need to win these kind of games, and they're not doing that. And so at this point, they're just trying to stay up near the top of the table, get some European play next season. And sorry, Juice, to rub it in, Milan draw, 1-1, Torino, really? Torino, Juice? Anyways. Does anybody want to challenge Juve? No, I doesn't look like it. Doesn't look like it at all. And we're going to wrap things up in Germany. Germany has been, well, let's be honest, not even Germany, just Bayern Munich. Bayern Munich has been quite interesting. Interesting the fact that everything they do, it's like, you know, they're just going to kind of continue setting records and doing things that are I mean, every game that they win, every game that they don't lose, is another record, basically. Because what's going on right now is, with the win at the weekend, 5-0 over Eintracht Frankfurt, they've gone 44 games in Bundesliga unbeaten. Now, that's a record in itself, okay? So, unless somebody beats them, that record's going to essentially keep continuing on until next season, more than likely. Because I don't see anybody really, you know, stopping them at this point. But more specifically, I kind of wanted to point this one out because this was really, really, really impressive for me. And I mean, yeah, you look at Xavi, you look at Iniesta and what they were able to do with the tiki-taka football and the amount of, you know, times they've touched the ball, the amount of completed passes they made. Very impressive in general, right? You know, they well into the hundreds in terms of completed passes. And that's, again, very impressive. Thiago Alcantara continues to impress me, especially. Obviously, last weekend, he had that incredible bicycle kick to to get that injury time winner for Bayern Munich. But this weekend, he sets a record after just a masterful job in the midfield. 185 touches from Thiago Alcantara. 159 completed passes. A record, easily, by far, in Bundesliga. So, I mean, if you're Manchester United, you must be looking at Thiago Alcantara and being a little bit upset, a little bit, you know, jealous that he's not on your team. Why didn't you guys get this man? Because this guy could easily turn around your midfield, your season, your hopes, your dreams, whatever. And if you're smart, United, maybe try to get him in the summer. I don't even know if he's going to be available because that price tag is quickly going up. Another death over the weekend I kind of wanted to kind of touch on was Philip Seymour Hoffman. Supposed drug overdose. I'm pretty sure it is. Happened in his Manhattan apartment. Just an incredible actor. I don't know what you guys think about him, but I've never seen a movie of his where he doesn't present a specific character. You know, there's a lot of people out there, a lot of actors out there where it's the same character no matter what. For example, in general, Julia Roberts. I think that she's been in so many different movies, but you see the same Julia Roberts in every single movie. I'm trying to think of another one. Oh, well, and this shouldn't even be counted because he's technically an entertainer slash singer. But Justin Timberlake, if you watch him in any movie, he always looks like Justin Timberlake, just, you know, saying lines. Just doesn't impress me. Whereas Philip Seymour Hoffman always kind of came out, and, you know, whether it's his job in Capote or any one of his films, really, just incredible character development. Maybe this might be the drama geek coming out of me in high school, but just always impressed me. And I mean, you know, it's sad to see him go. Drug overdose, can't really say much about that. It's not, I don't know why he may or may not have been doing heroin. It could just be the crazy actor inside of him. I'm not sure. I don't even want to go into that. But in general, it's sad to see him go. But let's not stop the show on a low note. Let's end on a high note. So again, guys, look forward to tonight. I'm really excited about the Manchester City's Chelsea match. I'm hoping and praying that Chelsea don't end up playing 19th century football like West Ham did against them the weekend before. You know, Jose has come out and said that he wants to attack City. He's promised a lot of good stuff in his press conferences, saying that, you know, that this is going to be a very entertaining game and that it'll be well worth a watch. And many people are just generally interested in watching it. But more than likely, you know, you got to think that Chelsea are playing to or not going to be attacking and leaving themselves too open in this match. So cross our fingers. Let's hope for an entertaining match. More than likely, we're going to get goals at least from one side of the equation in City, regardless of whether or not Sergio Aguero is gone. So very much looking forward to this match. I hope you guys all enjoy it. If you guys want to get in touch with the show, feel free to email us anytime, show@worldfootballdaily.com. We always answer those emails. I haven't checked them this morning, only because I've had quite the busy weekend. Oh, I'll tell you about it. Here, let's go. Here was my Super Bowl weekend, guys. Obviously, I watched a bunch of soccer because Ollie's gone, and I wanted to be as prepared as possible for today. But my Super Bowl itself, me and the wifey and my daughter actually went to a good friend of ours house who was holding a Super Bowl party, and very nice, incredible spread. They had hot wings out there for me, which really it's all I needed. They also had some barbecue pulled pork, you know. There's this place called Woodfire Ranch or Wood Ranch out here, and they actually got these garlic butter rolls that they have. Oh my gosh, just thinking about it makes my mouth water right now. But so yeah, great spread, ton of beer, all that good stuff. I had to be kind of, you know, in check because I'm driving. You know, I got a daughter with me, so there wasn't very much drinking on my part. But tried to enjoy the game nonetheless. And in general, I did, because I had no dog in the fight. I mean, I had plenty of friends who were on either side of the equation, particularly one cousin of mine who has sold out to be a Broncos fan. It's a long story. If you really want to email me and I'll explain. But he sold out because his girlfriend is from Denver, and he became a Denver Broncos fan. By no means has he ever been a professional football fan, but you know, he's dating a girl who is, and yeah, so that's how he sold out. And it was kind of nice to see him just kind of squirm and squeal and you know, go from such highs before the match, you know, taking pictures on Facebook with a horse head on and, you know, dressed in orange garb with the Broncos jersey and, you know, striking a Heisman pose, this, that, and the other. I know Heisman's college, guys. Don't worry. But I'm just, you know, I'm explaining this to you. It was nice to see him kind of just go from such highs to complete lows. Because really, I mean, Seahawks just completely dismantled them. It looked a lot like Bayern Munich beating Eintracht Frankfurt. Okay, that's kind of what I would, or maybe, you know, Inter or Juve Inter, because at least the Broncos did score more like a consolation goal than anything else, and that's where it was. So we'll leave it at that, guys. Thanks so much for making our show your show, guys. Keep emailing us, show@worldfootballdaily.com. You can hit me up anytime, Rafa@worldfootballdaily.com, or go bother Juice for a little bit. Juice is available at Juice_Wilson on Twitter. You can email him, Oliver@worldfootballdaily.com, and call us, 310-909-8483 if you want. Again, we're all over the place, guys. We're here for you. So hit us up anytime. Thanks for listening, guys. Enjoy the match tonight. We'll see you tomorrow.